Well, welcome, and thank you everybody for coming to this session, since I know it's during the lunch hour. I just wanted to briefly introduce my colleague, Ian Weston. He's the director of the National Resource Center, and he also has many years' experience working on Capitol Hill, and he's going to help explain some of the work we do with family advocates. And I also wanted to point out, and she might be embarrassed for this, another one of our colleagues, Renal Patel, who's in the back of the room. She does a lot of the work with our family advocates on a day-to-day basis and has come. Oh, and we have another colleague in the back, Mike Ely, who's from another of our sister resource centers who works on data and does a lot with families on data. So thank you to both of you for coming. A lot of the work that we do fits nicely with the first two presentations, who talked a little bit more about the data and research side of public policy advocacy. And we're here to talk to you about sort of the family, the consumer, the storytelling side. I guess, first of all, neither of us have anything to disclose. We're in a unique situation because even though we work on public health issues, we can't advocate ourselves. The National Resource Center supports a federal program on emergency medical services for children. So since our funding comes from federal dollars, we're prohibited from going out and doing the lobbying ourselves. And kind of the other side of the coin is that most of our clients, the people who get money from the federal program, also can't lobby because they're grantees in the states who are working to improve the infrastructure for pediatric emergency care. Or they're academics in medical centers who are doing research in pediatric emergency medical care. But because all of them are getting federal funding, they're really limited in what they can do to get the stories and get the data out there. So what we've done is tried to create family advocates, people who really are the ones who have kids who are using the emergency medical care system, who know firsthand the good things and the bad things about the system in their individual states, and we're trying to cultivate them to be the ones to go out and do the advocacy for us. I'm going to talk a little bit about advocacy. I know many of you do advocacy efforts, so I'm not going to go into too much detail, but I think for me, coming from Capitol Hill and also working in advocacy from the other side, trying to get other people to influence legislators, is two things come to mind. The first is that people think, I can't do this. I need to be an expert in advocacy. And I think what people forget is that advocacy is sort of a natural thing that everybody does. It's just going out and talking about the issues that are important to you, things you're passionate about, things you already know about. So you don't have to go out and educate yourself on an issue. In fact, if you're educating yourself on an issue, you probably shouldn't be advocating on that cause because it means that it's not really that important to you. The other thing I think that happens is people think of public policy advocacy as really that direct one-on-one going in and meeting with the legislator. And clearly that's probably one of the most effective means. But there are other ways you can change policies. You can talk to community leaders and professionals. You can talk to the media. That message gets to those policymakers, even if you're not the one talking directly to them. And you can even talk to your families, friends, and neighbors. But I think the most important thing to keep in mind is that if you don't speak up, someone else is, and that person may not hold the same view as you. Don't take for granted that just because you know that your legislator has supported similar issues in the past, that they're going to do the same things again. Times change, political priorities change, money changes, and what's a priority for someone one day may not be the priority for them, you know, even a week later. So you really have to make sure that you're getting out there and not letting someone else do it for you. So why is it important to advocate or to build relationships with policymakers? Again, you know, you're the expert. The policymakers, they're elected to serve you. And I think in terms of public health, few and far between legislators, at least at the federal level, really have a public health or a healthcare background. You know, some of these legislators may know a little bit about different areas of health care. I was from a member of Congress who had been an insurance commissioner in a state, so he knew a lot about health care financing, but he wasn't a public health care expert necessarily. So it's really up to you to go out and make sure they know what's going on in their districts, in the states, even at national level. What are the trends and what are the priorities in public health? And I think you'll find, and again, this was touched upon a little bit, that if you go out and advocate, if you have frequent contact with your policymakers, you're going to become an expert for them. And that policymaker is going to start calling on you to provide the information that they need. It's not going to be you calling on them all the time. And obviously by frequent, we don't mean frivolous. Don't be that person that when you call your legislator's office, everyone sees your phone number come up on caller ID and they say not it because they don't want to talk to you because you're calling all the times about things that aren't germane to what's going on. But I think people don't realize that it's not just you providing them information, but it's really powerful when you find yourself in a position to be called upon by the policymaker. So how do you build those relationships? In addition to knowing about your issue, you need to know about the policymaker. Look at their websites, look at their press releases, look at lists of bills they've sponsored or co-sponsored and find out what they're interested or not interested in. And don't forget personal background. You can find a lot of information on websites that you couldn't find before the internet came around. Is a legislator a member of the hospital or the children's hospital if it's a pediatric issue in your state or community? What other kinds of committees do they serve on outside of Congress or the state legislature? But you really have to be careful with that personal information because sometimes they may reveal family situations on their website, and it's okay to use that, but just, you know, keep that line between, don't try to manipulate that personal information, and make a connection. I think sometimes we forget that policymakers are people too, and they don't just want to hear the facts and the figures. They want you to make a connection with them. It makes them feel good if someone's trying to relate to them and their situation and all the pressures they have on themselves, that maybe they're trying to do the best they can for you. And just say thank you. It's amazing how many times people come in to meet with a legislator and they always think, I have to have something to tell them. Well, just go in and say thank you. Just tell them you're grateful for the support that you've been giving them or they've been giving you to, you know, to that point in time. And that helps them remember that the work they've been doing isn't taken for granted. And again, that probably makes them more willing to support you in the future. We talked a little bit about this, why different ways you can build relationships with policymakers, telephone calls, letters, things like that, so we won't talk too much about that. But then we want to transition to the family's perspective. So everything we just talked about, why when you're doing that is important to have a family perspective. Well, first of all, whether you bring a family or consumer with you or not, I think a group of advocates really brings a more complete picture of the issue at hand. You get a bigger breadth, depth, and even volume of backgrounds. If you go in and you're a public health professional or a physician or a nurse or whatever hat you wear, you have a certain perspective that you're bringing to the issue. But that family member can really make that issue personal for the legislator. I think we kind of in our center have started to call it storytelling. If you go in and you say, and I'll use our program for example, you know, the EMSC program was created in 1984 under public law X, Y, and Z, and one of the things we do is try to make sure that ambulances have, you know, insert name of piece of equipment that I can't even pronounce here, so, you know, kids have them. The policymaker is going to start to nod and maybe glaze over a little bit. But if you go in and there's someone who can say, listen, I know why we have to have this piece of equipment on an ambulance because my child is a consumer of the emergency medical services system, and that if that equipment isn't there, he or she might die. And it sounds drastic, but we have families who've been in that situation, these awful situations where even with the best of intentions, because that equipment or because that practice wasn't in place, their children have become disabled. Their children have died. And again, it sounds horrible, and you're not trying to manipulate people's emotions, but that sounds so much different to a policymaker than talking about public law number and name of equipment and practice and guidelines and things like that. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Ian, and he's going to talk a little bit about what we've done to make sure that family voice is there, especially given our own limitations on advocacy.
I know I got 2 minutes, so we'll kind of breeze through this really quick. We at least wanted to provide a very intimate setting in which to provide an example of how we take a advocacy perspective and bring it down to a family-centered care level. In 1999, the EMSC program developed the Family Advisory Network. which was a way to incorporate a family perspective within the program's priorities. We, just to give you a very quick background about the program, each state is provided, 55 states and territories around the country are provided with funding to meet federal benchmarks as it relates to pediatrics and pre-hospital and trauma care. These range from everything from pre-hospital education to hospital preparedness to pediatric equipment. We wanted to make sure that the family had a significant contribution and significant involvement in the process in which states evaluate their internal systems and ensure that the pediatrics and pediatric care was well prepared for to care for their child. And who best to do that is really the family member. It's the people that are consuming the service. So family members, and we'll talk about really quickly, there are folks that have either used the system intimately, they've got a child with special health care needs that's that visits the ER on a regular basis, or they just have a general interest in emergency medical care. We developed this, as kind of a way to encourage parent involvement in federal benchmarks in the federal system, because they really have the intimate knowledge of what the causes and the symptoms of an illness are, how kids react to care, both on the ambulance and in the emergency room, we really thought that they would be the best advocate for the child in those settings. So it was developed, to ensure the family-centered care focus, to have a greater understanding of children with special health care needs, which is a population that is really just not advocated for or not well represented in the healthcare spectrum, and to have parents serve as community allies in support of patient and family-centered care services within their community. How do we recruit? It's really folks that are involved in community and civic-based organizations. Organizations that we do a lot of work with include the General Federation of Women's Clubs, the Kiwanis Clubs. Those are kind of the organizations, parent boards at hospitals. Those are really where we generate the interest from in terms of our family partners. They're passionate about issues. They have working relationships with healthcare programs, and they can create general outreach plans within these networks to advocate for children. Almost done. Here's a perfect example. Gene Rickerson in our state of Washington had a 16-year-old son suffer a traumatic brain injury during a high school football game. She is intimately involved in a group called SportsConcussions.org. She actually started it, focusing on injury prevention on the football field. Shauna Houghton Ward has a daughter with a special health care need. She is now a parent support coordinator at a NICU at Primary Children's in Salt Lake City, and is also very involved in parent and child advocacy within her state. How do we put them to work? We build coalitions and community partnerships, coordinate community events, help raise contributions for needed resources. Almost done. In terms of our program engagement with these family members, our program specifically offers workshops in family-centered care and related topics in terms of one-on-one workshops, group workshops at our annual meetings. We coordinate their family representation on national, state, and local boards. We provide about 100 different online resources and then awards and recognition. Last slide. It's all about the team, and in terms of our program, it takes not only policymakers and children, but these family and community organizations to make advocacy work. Voila. Thank you. Sorry for the delay.